Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to call the March 20, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chak?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera will be arriving later this evening. Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. Proto?
Here by the grace of God and the kindness of Pam McAsey.
You'll have to explain that to us.
That's a story. Yeah, yeah. It's been told.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
Thank you. First order of business, public privilege of the floor for members of the public. We have some folks signed up. You have 3 minutes to address the legislature, and Kathy will help you keep time. If anybody else wants to speak after we're done with the list, then you just come up to the mic. Bernie Hutchins and then Stephen Hess.
Yes, I'm Bernie Hutchins, and there's this colorful map that goes with my presentation here. I call your attention to the survey problems relating to the county's taking map from my property at 1016 Hanshaw Road, as shown on the handout. The small photo shows the area between my property and my neighbor. It contains the survey pins and my neighbor's stockade fence. The corresponding section of the county-provided survey map is about that. We begin at the point of beginning, POB, which is the red dot in the center. If that point were a point of a normal survey, the property owner could easily locate it. But it's not marked by any monument in any way. Nor, as a practical matter, is it possible for any property owner to locate this. The red dot is to be located by starting at some other point, which is somewhere a half kilometer away in Cayuga Heights. The property owner would have to measure along two cord lines within the roadbed, a length of 471.23 meters to another point to be located, and then construct a perpendicular northward 8.54 meters to find the location of the red dot. The county is aware of the difficulty and expense that locating this point would incur to us. Want your rights? Bring cash. The property owners are left, probably by intention, up the proverbial creek. This could have been avoided by using the conventional survey method. In addition to my property, there is not just the possibility of there being a hidden, but of the reality of demonstrating a demonstrable error, the relationship of the stockade fence to the actual boundary fence. Survey pins known to the surveyor, county surveyor, are ignored. On the county's maps, we see in green the fence, which is the property line to the west. The property line, in fact, to the east, as seen in the large photo. It's not my fence. General error was called to the attention of RK Height in early 2011 and was acknowledged by the county's action, reducing my compensation by $100. No change was ever made to the map. As noted, I attempted to get the F&I to address this in April and May of 2011. Whether or not the error is serious cannot be addressed until such time as the correct reference frame is established. I've asked the county to come up and stake the corners of the parcel. They are seizing from me. They have staked other properties, but not replied to my request in any way. Perhaps an engineer would ask too many inconvenient questions. That is our habit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bernie. Stephen Hest, and then John Morey.
My name's Stephen Hest.
I'm the coordinator of a group, local group called the Sunday Hikers. We go hiking every Sunday for 2 hours in the morning all year round, including during the hunting season. The group's been operating for more than 7 years, and during that time it's gotten quite large. Last fall, we hiked in Tompkins County on 3 Sundays during hunting season. We had more than 50 people on each hike. I'm here to ask you, there's a proposal to use rifles for deer hunting. I'm here to ask you to turn that down. It's selfish, I know. You know, we like to hike, and there's a lot of people like me. I don't oppose hunting at all, and it's possible that it might help call the deer herds. I'm not really sure. But I think it does pose a danger. Using rifles could pose a danger to people who are walking through the woods. Our choice would be to tough it out and kind of try and push the worries off to the side, or just stay home during hunting season. I'm the coordinator of this group, and we have an active email, and there was some discussion about this during the last week. One of the hikers is also a hunter, and he said, well, hunters have rights too, and we really prefer to use the rifles. I guess it's easier to get the deer. Maybe it's more fun. I'm not really sure. But the worst case is that you could stay home for a month and let us hunt. Well, there's more of us, I think, hikers than there are hunters. I'm not sure, but I hope so. I think the hunting seems to function pretty well now with the shotguns. I have never heard of a hunter who failed to get his deer. At least if he did, he doesn't tell anyone. So they're getting the deer. We're able to coexist with them. We go out hiking. We stay in the safe area. There's no stray rifle bullets whizzing by. We're not worrying. My wife's not going to hike if you permit rifle hunting. So I ask that the situation stay as it is now, with just shotguns and the muzzle loaders we can live with, because there's not that many people using them. So we take our chance. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Hess. John Morey, and then Herb Engman.
Hi, my name is John Morey, and I've lived in this county 51 years over in Groton, 58 years. I have a little hobby farm over there, about 80 acres, and I'm a hunter safety instructor for the DEC, too. And I've been listening, you know, a little bit on the radio and the newspaper and stuff about hunting in Tompkins County with a rifle. As far as we know, they're hunting with rifle every day in Tompkins County, even during deer season. Right now, people don't understand that, I guess. Right now, there's a season called coyote season that they hunt with rifles, and that runs till the end of March. Then there's the varmint hunting, which goes all of the summertime. And the DEC, every year, they give out hundreds of nuisance permits for deer to the farmers and the local orchards and stuff, and they're allowed to use rifle to shoot at these deer. And that's why I guess I don't understand. You know, everybody thinks it's a shotgun rifle, because today that if you're during regular deer season, if you have any type of gun that's under 16-inch barrel, you can use a rifle cartridge in it to hunt deer. That's for during regular hunting season. You know, it's 30. I'm into ballistics and stuff too. I know all that. That's probably over a lot of your heads. Muzzle-loading rifles, of course. That's the same as a rifle. You're just pouring the powder down the barrel, and the velocity of them is more than some of the rifles that I own. And the shotguns that they're making now, 10, 15 years ago, they started making rifled barrels for these rifles, these shotguns, which shoots a special Sabbath bullet for it, and the velocity of these are just as much as any rifle that you take out hunting. You know, I just wanted to explain to it a little bit that, you know, that's there's not much difference between all these guns now that they're out there. I have a lot of old rifles that the ballistics of them are even slower than most of the shotguns that they put out. So thank you for your time, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you very much. Herb, and then Liz Thomas.
Just to explain, Naaman Horwitz is here tonight to report for the town of Ithaca, but I wanted to say a few words in opposition to the rifle hunting for big game in Tompkins County, in addition to the town of Ithaca's opposition, which we passed on March 12th. I wanted to talk more from a personal point of view. I grew up hunting, fishing, trapping, and for the first 25 years I lived in Tompkins County. I lived in very rural Danby and Newfield, so I'm very familiar with the hunting culture and weapons. And the reason I'm opposed to the extension to rifles is that there will be some hunters who will be tempted to take longer shots. When you take a longer shot, you're less likely to know exactly what's behind your target. And if you don't know what's behind your target, you don't know what you're eventually going to hit should you miss that target. The advantage of the shotgun is it makes you get closer. So you can have a better chance of recognizing what it is you're shooting at and what's behind that in case you miss it. If you've never killed an animal, it's a lot more difficult than you think. There are some very good hunters out there that can drop a deer or a bear with one shot very, very successfully. There are a lot of others that will wound animals because they don't hit it in the right place. And I think switching to rifles will have the effect of longer shots and more wounded animals, and I don't think that's a positive thing. The other thing in the town of Ithaca, we're a town of hills. And you shoot on one hill, a rifle bullet is going to make it to the other hill if it misses everything. And we don't know what it's going to hit, including the city of Ithaca. Bullets from rifles will be very easily traveled across Cayuga Lake. It's not that wide. So rifles simply introduce a new element that simply is not necessary. We've been having shotguns for deer and bear for decades. Well, not for bear, but for deer for decades. And there hasn't been any real problem with that. So there just is no compelling reason to move to rifles for big game in Tompkins County.
Thank you, Herb. Liz Thomas.
Hello, I'm Liz Thomas. I'm the deputy supervisor from the town of Ulysses and also on the town board. And I'm also here about rifles. You've probably heard enough now, but I'm also in opposition of this resolution, as is our town board, who should have received a resolution from our clerk recently that was passed unanimously. And I, too, want to make it clear from my background that my late husband was an avid hunter. I've certainly cut up enough deer. I've plucked geese. I've smoked ducks, and I love game. So I'm not anti-hunting. My father, my brother, and I, who all live in Tompkins County, allow hunting on our land. However, if rifle hunting is allowed, I have enough concerns, and so do many other people in the town of Ulysses that I've spoken with, that I think this will result in a lot more land being posted against hunting. What I'm wondering from the resolution is what the objective is. It's not really clear what the objective is. I would think, from the county's perspective, that the objective might be to reduce the deer population, which we all know is very high. If more land is posted, I'm afraid that will contradict that objective. As I say, again, the resolution the objective is not clear to me. I would think that the county's primary concern would be, again, safety. And I, too, am concerned about the distance that a rifle can travel beyond a shotgun with a slug in it. And I do realize that rifles are allowed for other smaller creatures, but again, you have to be close enough to see that small creature. With a deer, from my little bit of hunting that I have done, there's an adrenaline rush before, you know, while you're out there, and putting a weapon in the hands of somebody who's inexperienced like me, would be a terrible thing for me to have a rifle in my hand going after a deer. I'm not calm enough. I figured that out. There are other people that would fall into that category too. One thing in the resolution that was stated is that the accident rates in counties where rifle hunting is allowed has gone down. What's not stated is that perhaps the accident rate has gone down in all the counties. Maybe there are fewer deer hunters, I know, that these days. So it's not really clear from the resolution what, you know, where those statistics came from or what they're reflecting. If the objective is to allow hunters to use rifles for big game only, then I would say, as is stated in the resolution, there are other counties surrounding us that hunters can conveniently go to. This county is more residential than some of the surrounding counties, and I think that there are residential constituents that are not hunters that that the county should be considering as you address this resolution. Hunting is allowed within 500 feet of a house. A rifle bullet certainly goes much farther than that. So for the last 30 years, at least, since I was hunting with my husband, you know, he was always very successful with his shotgun and slug. We had plenty of deer meat. I would say that deer hunters, if that's their objective, is to get meat, they have the weapons that they need to do that. And just one more comment. I would like to say that representing a rural community, that just out of courtesy, it would be great if something like this that does affect rural communities would be brought to TCOG so that we can, you know about some of these things.
Right, so thank you. Thank you. Okay, thanks very much. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the legislature from the public? Sure, go ahead. And state your name and where you live, please.
Dwayne Hartman. I live in Newfield. Oh, I'm sorry. The
young lady said that she didn't understand the purpose.
Could you use the microphone, please?
If anybody in this room has deer hunted over the last 10 or 12 years, they've seen the price of slugs increase, and especially the sabotaged slugs, from about $10 a box to anywhere from 15 to 20. And that's not exaggerating the situation. Of those boxes of shells, you're going to buy anywhere between $45 and $100 worth of slugs in a year to hunt. You're going to spend 90% of those slugs sighting your gun in. Guns change every year. Shotguns change more than most. The manufacturers of the slugs use the sabotaged slug because they have the rifled barrels and they're getting away from the smooth bores. And in the process of that, the tolerances to each manufacturer of the shotgun barrels differ to the point that a friend of mine in Newfield and I last summer bought two Mossberg 500 20-gauge slug guns. And I told Chris, I said, I've had excellent luck with my targets, and here's one from it was done in February on a 32-degree day in the afternoon. It was on the 16th. Temperature was 32 degrees. It was snowing out. This is a sabotaged slug out of my gun. There's three bullets in the same hole. Here's number four. Where did it go? That's the problem there's been forever and ever and ever with a shotgun. You have flyers. Anybody that's ever shot a shotgun knows that you're going to have flyers. They just are not that accurate. They never have been. I've been shooting them since 1959 when they were made out of cardboard. The sleeves that they were contained in were made out of cardboard. They've made some improvements. The biggest improvement was going in muzzleloaders. Muzzleloaders weigh anywhere from 6 to 9 pounds. Got one shot. that's caused part of the problem of why we're here about the rifle. A 20 cartridges, rifle bullets from Remington or Winchester will cost you about $24. You can take your kid or you out with that box of shells and sight your gun in from year to year with probably 6 or 8 of them or 10 and have enough to hunt. You will spend $45 trying to get your slug gun sighted in. Now, the one thing I want to bring to you, this gun was sighted in November. When I sighted the gun in, it was set at 150 yards and at an inch high. The box of slugs that I use from Federal indicates on the box 150 yards is the sight-in distance. That gun is still, that bullet is still airborne at 300 yards. There's several gentlemen in this room that have the ballistic coefficients I did on the bullets, on the rifle bullets. Center mass of a deer is 32 inches high. At 500 yards, those bullets were on the ground. The highest velocity bullet was 3,100 feet out of a 300 Winchester mag with a 150 grain bullet, and it was 44.8 with a 100 yard dead zero.
So finish up, please.
I'm going. Okay. But to say that those bullets are the rifles are going to carry much farther, yes, they are. We have a test that was done in Pennsylvania. Took 4 years. And they concluded that the sabotaged slug at a straight distance out in front of you, no degree incline, straight distance, the sabotaged slug was more dangerous than a 150-grain bullet out of a 30-06.
All right, thank you, sir. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? All right. Nam, I'd love to have you come in and speak from the town of Ithaca. And Liz, if you want to put on your town of Ulysses hat. We'd love to hear from the town. Welcome.
I'm Naaman Horwitz, a member of the town of Ithaca Town Board. As I understand it, my job is not to try to persuade you to do anything, but simply to report to you what we've been up to. I'm a new member, relatively new member of the board, and as such, I may not know what the really important things are. You'll have to put up with my ignorance and perhaps naivete, but I'll tell you what I think has gone on at least at the last meeting. You have a grant to develop the Briggs property, which you own, and you're sending out a RFP to prospective developers, and we're kind enough to bring that a draft of that to us for our comments. The town in general is very supportive of the idea of a more densely populated development on the West Hill, one that would designed to reduce the amount of additional traffic. Traffic being one of the main complaints that we hear from our residents on the West Hill now, and a worry that they have about the effect of future development. Nevertheless, the Briggs property, which you own, is close to the hospital and is not consistent. Its development, this kind of development, is not consistent with what we see as the what our comprehensive plan committee sees as the most desirable development in that area, namely more institutional type development. That means assisted living center or a nursing home, taking advantage of the proximity to the hospital and nearby medical facilities. As Herb has already told you, we passed a resolution opposing the making rifles legal in the county. I won't say anything more about that. We voted a resolution supporting the county's application for a grant to to identify opportunities to cut costs by cooperating in providing services, which to us sounds like a great idea. We understand you decided not to proceed with that grant. I hope in the future perhaps you'll change your mind. As of now, at least, you have our full support. The last thing I'll mention, we had some internal controversy connected with whether or not we should have put ourselves on the list of groups that supported the living wage, the rally that took place recently. In one thing that came out of that controversy, which I am hopeful will be useful, were the suggestions that in the future we might spend some time on the following two questions. One, must the town board pass new resolutions for every action taken on what may be a related action to an action that had already been taken? And two, does the town board represent the town as a whole or only itself? I, as a new member, will welcome some discussion on both of these items as useful education for me as to where we're going. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Nam. And don't go away. This is when we you know, have open it up to questions, if there are any legislators who have questions. Anyone? Peter?
I was not aware of us not deciding not to accept that grant from intermunicipal cooperation. Is that true?
Yeah, there's been some email about that. Joe, you want to report
on
that?
I'll brief the legislature in
my
report tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's postponed. It's not gone away. It's postponed for this deadline. I would like to ask Nauman about and Herb about the issue on the land near CMC, near the Cougar Medical Center. We've long been talking about mixed-use development where you see residential and commercial, institutional, uses sort of cohabiting and being in the same neighborhood so that you see people having the opportunity at least to walk to some of the services and even jobs if they're there, to try to encourage that and to create a real neighborhood. And that was what our hope was about the land up at the hospital, or near the hospital. So it sounds like the idea of mixed-use development is not what you're looking at. Is that what I understand?
I think that's right, that we see the emphasis, it being more useful to have the emphasis on the more institutional type development. And one other thing I would like to mention in connection with that RFP, it mentioned parking should be no more than 1,200 feet from the entrance to any building. That seemed like a very big number to us, and we hope you'll give it some reconsideration. If you are trying to attract broad variety of people, the elderly are going to have a very hard time carrying groceries 1,200 feet, especially in the winter. So we thought that needed more attention.
Okay. Carol and then Pam?
Yeah. Can you tell us anything about the your comprehensive plan and where you stand in the process of revamping it and what the process might be in the future for working with you on things like entrances?
You've got the chairman of the Comprehensive Planning Committee right here.
We're looking forward to the day when we can work with you on the details.
Let me just add one thing to the discussion on the Biggs Complex land. It's not that the town of Ithaca has any objection to the project itself. It's a great project. It's based on models that we've had before in the town with Eco Village, so we're all in favor of it. The difference is that we're looking for mixed-use development on the other side of Route 96. We're planning a couple of completely new neighborhoods that can be a mixed-use neighborhood. But on the side with the hospital, that's 100 yards further north and just seems a bit isolated from the rest of the area that we're thinking of as a true mixed-use development area. So if we had our druthers, we'd rather see, as Nauman has said, an institutional use connected with the hospital, but we understand that we may not get our druthers on those things. The other thing is, in terms of the distance, we did have some further correspondence from Ed Marks on that, and that was an initial number that was used, but that in all reality there would be much shorter distances built into the project. As far as the comprehensive plan, we are now going through the future land use of the town, which is kind of a crucial stage because it has a lot to do with the vision of what we want the town of Ithaca to look like and what activities will be taking place there. So we're getting close. We're hoping that we will have a draft for review probably by July and put it out to reviewing bodies and the public for a second go-around in looking at what it is we've come up with so far. If I were to project, I would say it will more strongly protect open space and natural areas and conservation zones and farmland while trying to encourage development close to the city, in fact, right next to the city, and that's on all the hills, not just West Hill. So that's kind of where we are with the comp plan.
So can I ask a follow-up? So the process in the interim for working with the town is, do you have a moratorium, or can not just the county, can developers come and work with you on under the old terms?
There's a moratorium on West Hill, and we're several months into that, a moratorium on building on West Hill. But the county land is not included in that moratorium. It's all on the west side of 96.
Thank you.
Pam, and then Brian.
That's okay. I pass.
Okay, Brian.
Actually, my comment is to the gentleman. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Nauman Horowitz.
Good to meet you. I don't think I ever have before, but I seriously want to thank you for admitting here that that you too also have controversy in some of your meetings. Because ours are very much public with with television and things of that sort. But that's healthy to have disagreements and discuss things. And if you stick around long enough tonight, you'll probably hear another one. But that's okay. But I wanted to thank you for just
you're very welcome.
Bringing that back
this
out.
This controversy went on in the emails.
Okay.
All right. Anyone else? Thank you. And Liz, in the town of Ulysses.
I can reassure you, you are not alone in having controversial meetings. I'm Liz Thomas again, in the town of Ulysses, and one of the ones that we are really struggling with these days is about ambulance service between Ulysses and the village of Trumansburg. So that's what's been taking a lot of our time, and I'm not sure how important that is to the county legislature, but that's what we're spending some time on. Also, the brine concern that people have of brine being spread on state roads, that's taking up some of our time. The planning board is putting, I think, the final touches on the lakeshore and conservation zone, which will run along Cuba Lake up to about Du Bois Road and Willow Creek Road, if you're out that way. We wanted to put in some extra protections there for a number of reasons. It's very steep slopes and shallow soils, so that should be happening soon, and that's all part of our comprehensive plan, and which has been Ed knows about this, and so it should be all meshing together well. Another thing that we're spending quite a lot of time on is this friend of the court amicus brief that has to do with the court cases in Dryden and Middlefield about drilling. We do have quite a coalition that's building of towns, a lot of towns. I won't tell you right now the number because I don't know the updated one, but approaching 100, I believe, at the last count. Other than that, we're just involved in a number of different cooperative efforts with the cable and cell towers and the gas drilling task force and TCOG. So working together is certainly something that we believe in, even though it's not always easy. So, any questions? Thank you very much, Liz. Frank.
Thank you, Martha. Liz, Frank Proto. I have two questions, one on ag districts and one on recreation partnership. A couple of months back, the folks from Ulysses presented to the, I'm on the representative to the county's Ag and Farmland Protection Board. You guys presented one of the best developed plans that we had seen. And I was curious if you could say something about the implementation of what you've been working on and whether that's moving. And before you do that, the other question is, I'm also one of the representatives, the Recreation Partnership, of which your town is a member. Can you say something about the partnership agreement, the five-year agreement, is out presently for renewal. It has to be renewed by the end of the year. Without revealing any confidential information, can you say on behalf of the town or even on behalf of yourself what the status of that is, how the town might be looking at that?
As far as the rec partnership goes, we did finally find our representative for that group. We haven't had a representative sitting at that table for quite a while, neither us in the town of Ulysses nor the village of Trumansburg. And we do have a joint youth commission between the village and the town. So, and I have been up until a couple months ago the representative for the youth commission from the town. So we haven't, to be honest, the town board has not seen that, to my knowledge. I haven't seen the proposal yet from the rec partnership. So, or somehow or other that's not been clear to me. So I did miss the last youth partnership or youth commission meeting because I'm no longer the representative. So I'll follow up on that for you.
I will too.
Yeah.
Okay. It was handed, the agreement, the existing agreement was handed out, I think, at the last TCOG meeting. So ask Rox. Well, I'm not sure if Roxanne was at that meeting.
Is Roxanne the rep to TCOG?
Yeah, I'm there actually too. So so I have it in the papers there from TCOG.
Okay.
So I'll put it on my to-do list to make sure that that gets brought forward.
All right, and if you need another copy, get a hold of one of us. We'd be glad to see that you get one. Your representative sometimes, you know, he's aging out, and sometimes we have
don't
to...
Don't tell him that.
Don't tell him that? Okay.
As far as the Ag Protection Plan, that is this close to being finished. It really only needs a final review. I guess we've all been kind of wondering what's happening with that. It's on a certain desk, and it hasn't moved for quite a while. So maybe we just need to shake that a little bit because it's ever so close to being finished. And
you guys did a really terrific job on that plan. You really did.
Well, that was not without controversy either. So.
But nothing is anymore.
Right. No, we're quite proud of that plan and look forward to putting into place. It's just a matter of little towns don't have they don't have much staff, and so we're just juggling. I think the drilling issue has taken up an awfully lot of our time. So a number of other things that we would like to be working on, we just can't. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else for Liz? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I promise it won't be this long the next time.
That's great. Appreciate your coming. I'd like to go to legislative privilege at the floor, but first I wanted to mention for the audience, we have a sort of long list of things that we would normally do before we get to both the rifle resolution and something that
Ed is waiting for. I would like to go through legislative privilege and then go directly to those two resolutions, if we can do that, and then do the rest of our agenda after that. Legislative privilege, I would like to start with Mike Lane.
Is every 15 months I get the privilege of presenting the Distinguished Youth Award. And March of 2012 was my opportunity again. This award has been around for several years, and I always like to mention that it was Frank Proto who organized it to begin with, and I think it's been a real plus for our community to have young people recognized, and there's so many different things that they do. I think that's the thing that amazes me. I'm very pleased tonight to have someone from the village of Freeville. Will Sanders is our recipient this month, and his mom, Mika French, is with him. In early February 2nd, we received a very fine letter from Rachel Dickinson. Rachel is a resident of Freeville. She's a trustee of the village. She's a former school board member, and she's a writer. And we were so pleased to receive this letter and the fine things that she said. I'd really like to read a little bit about what she had to say about Will Sanders. Rachel would be here with us, but circumstances don't allow it tonight. She was also hoping to be able to talk a little bit about the village of Freeville on municipal privilege. We'll have her back in the future. Here's the letter. It's my great honor to nominate Will Sanders for a Tompkins County Youth Award. The first time I saw Will was years ago at a piano recital in the Freeville Methodist Church. As he sat on the piano bench playing classical pieces, his feet didn't touch the floor. He was about 6 or 7 years old, and his performance was amazing. Over the years, I'd see Will at every musical production I attended, either anchoring the percussion section or sitting at the piano as accompanist for the chorus or in the pit band for a theatrical production. His talent seemed endless as he moved from group to group during a concert. When the Freeville Methodist Church needed an accompanist for their regular services, they asked Will when he was only 14 or 15. Personally, I'm grateful to Will for playing piano at the funeral services of several family members, including my mother, where he played a beautiful Chopin etude. Since eighth grade, Will has served as the lighting designer and master electrician for a number of theatrical productions, including Alice in Wonderland, On the Town, Grease, The Importance of Being Earnest, Seussical, and Beauty and the Beast. A firm believer in community service, Will volunteered for community building works, helping with various housing projects geared toward providing environmentally conscious housing for low-income families. He was also a member of the Freeville Youth Group, where he participated in service projects as the 30-hour famine and Operation Christmas Child by World Vision. In addition to serving as church accompanist, Will works at Jason's Grocery, where he does traditional store jobs like running the register and stocking shelves, but the owner also gives him IT-related projects to work on, including installing CCTV camera systems, installing point-of-sale software, maintaining the ATM, and configuring the store's electronic lock. Will has been on the high honor roll throughout high school and will receive an honors diploma with advanced designation from Dryden. He doesn't know yet where he will go to college, but he plans on majoring in computer science with an emphasis on computer networking and security. He will also continue to play piano and work in the theater while in college. I will miss seeing him in the little village or on the stage at Dryden High School when he goes to college, but I know that he has a very bright future ahead of him. Sincerely, Rachel Dickinson. Will we have a plaque for you. It's the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. It's presented to William Sanders in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, March 2012. And this award is sponsored by the Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Cayuga Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, A&B Awards and Engraving. Congratulations, Will.
It's an honor to receive this award. I'd just like to thank Rachel Dickinson for nominating me and, of course, the county legislator for giving me the award. And I'd also like to thank my mom and my family and my friends just for being so supportive of me during my youth.
And I wanted to mention that Will's dad just wasn't able to be here. Will's dad is Paul Sanders. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike. Any other legislators? Peter.
I don't know how many of you saw... Can you hear? I don't know how many of you saw the story in the front page of today's Ithaca Journal about the corpse plant at Cornell. But I saw it this morning, and I went to look at it. And I'll tell you, it's the sight of the year. This is a plant, a flower, which stands about 4 feet tall, the flower itself. It happened not to be in bloom when I was there. It goes on and off. But to describe what it looks like, it looks like a beach umbrella closed. You know what a beach umbrella looks like closed? There's a pole and then there's layers of cloth around it. The beach umbrella opens from the top, but the plant opens from the bottom. And so if you see it on a good day, this sort of thing that goes up like that opens wide with its petals. And it's quite a sight. I mean, it was unfortunately not open when I was there. It was closed. But still in all, that's why I happened to have my camera, because I took a lot of pictures of this corpse plant. There are approximately 150 such plants in the world. They're very unusual. It comes from Sumatra. It lives for a couple of days, and it reproduces. And then it dies, and it blooms maybe 3, 4, 5 years later. So its lifetime of being alive is a couple of days out of 5 years. But its most interesting feature is that it's a wonderful thing, what Darwin discovered, that it needs flies to pollinate. And as a result, it has developed a chemical that has the odor of rotting meat. And that attracts the flies. So it's called a corpse plant because it smells like a corpse. Anyway, it was the height of my day. And I don't know if it's going to be open tomorrow, but or exactly how long it's going to live. But if you have a chance, it's up on Tower Road just beyond Judd's Falls Road, just east of Judd Falls Road on the left-hand side of the street in a greenhouse. So, anyway, that's my report.
I don't know, Peter. It's disappointing to know that we can't compete with a plant that smells like rotting meat, but I guess there are other compensations. Carol and then Will.
Yeah, I put information on your desks. I just wanted to point out Don Barber and I will be doing a presentation on this Thursday evening, on the results of some research we've done and put out on taxation issues related to gas drilling. We are aiming to answer questions like, how soon can we have relief in our budget here from this activity? How much relief will we have in that budget, if ever? For individuals, will drilling raise or lower my property taxes? This was an effort of a task force of the Council of Governments, and they have asked us to put on a presentation that is directed, and in particular, effort to get out municipal officials those of us in the county, towns, cities, municipalities who need to grapple with our budgets and predict for the future what might happen. But the public is welcome. That will be at the library, the Borg Warner Room at the library, Thursday evening from 5 until 6:30. That is timed to follow immediately on the TCOG meeting. I have just a couple of copies if anybody would really like them, hard copy of the white paper that came out of this task force. I want to in particular thank, though, Jay Franklin, Al Fiorella from our Department of Assessment, some private appraisers who worked with us, Art Pierce, some landowners who had leases, and just a group of concerned citizens who grappled with the question of what the process is and what is it, might it mean for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Will, right? Yeah, yeah. Will and then Frank.
Okay. I just wanted to add a little bit to Peter's comment. I, too, went up to see the corpse plant with my wife, Ellie. At the prompting of Dooley, who had seen it, I guess, the night before. Peter, I had the pleasure of actually being there when the odor, or fragrance, as it might think, was perhaps a little stronger than it was today. It was the hype, actually, the first night that it came out. And it was quite unique, I have to say. But what I was struck at was the fact that there was several hundred people lined up to see this plant in the middle of the day. People were stopping what they were doing and saying, let's go out and see this amazing thing in nature. And to me, that spoke a lot about our community and you know, what people will pay attention to. And I am very thankful to Cornell for making this available to the community and really being very welcoming.
Thank you. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of items. At the last legislative meeting, Dooley and I raised the concern about hydrilla and the potential for some problems with regard to the Cornell Sailing Club doing the dredging, if you remember. I just wanted to report to you that Shirley Egan, this broadcast is watched. Shirley Egan emailed me almost immediately when I got back to the office. There was an email from her explaining what the timetable was and that they had taken appropriate steps with regard to the DEC and whatnot. We still, the WRC, the Water Resources Council, still felt that we should send a letter explaining that there was a concern and that we've asked Cornell through Shirley to let us know what the what they find, if anything. We hope nothing, but we simply don't know. And the concern was if they disturb the hydrilla bed, if there is one there, it could be a major concern. In that same vein, yesterday at the Water Resources Council meeting, we had a report from the city regarding Lindeman Creek, which they did do an extensive dredging there with a DEC permit, and the city did a phenomenal job of excavating hydrilla. So, or the dredgings. So we don't know if there was anything in there, but that was a critical area last year. The chemicals will be spread this summer. Craig Scott was telling us yesterday that there is a procedure. There'll be two doses with two different chemicals, and they will be introduced at a level that it will not be harmful to humans, but hopefully will help. Well, we don't know if it'll arrest it, but we hope it'll have more of an effect than things have had. We have not received any word from the state about this $700 to $1 million. I was going to ask Joe or Martha about that when they give their reports, but my suspicion is you haven't heard anything regarding that. So
I'll have a little update in my report.
Okay. The second item, I wanted to let you know that I took a little grief at the last county legislative meeting from one of my colleagues. It was a challenge to meet her at the GIAC boxing ring so that we could continue our sparring. I want you to know that I went on Saturday, only to find that there was a sign on the door that said postponed. So the only conclusion I could draw is that the mere presence of me showing up caused them not to go. Leslin, am I on the right track, Leslin?
You are. It was for additional training for me.
You can't use karate. You can't. On one personal note, I had a, this is a mea culpa, right? I had a little experience today, matter of fact, two of them, that I wouldn't recommend to any one of you, but I had a little mishap with my truck on the Elmira Road, and luckily no one was hurt or anything like that. But I wanted to tell you that this town is amazing. I came to a stop, and the fellas from Cost Tire were out in the street with a jack in probably 10 seconds, and the Ithaca City Police were right in back of me to make sure that there wasn't any problem. All of it took about an hour, but it was, it kind of restores your faith in people. And then on top of that, I had a second escapade later this afternoon at the TCAT garage with my car. And I was serious about my earlier comment. If it wasn't for Pam, now some of you would rather I didn't show tonight, but you can blame Pam for this. Pam got me here, got me back to pick up Nathan's favorite car.
Is that what you're driving today?
Oh, I did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell them what happened to the second car.
I think my tracker blew the engine.
Time to trade.
Oh, no.
It was
two breakdowns in one day.
That's the 79 Oldsmobile.
Well, but right? Thank God nobody got hurt. And Jim's right. It's time to trade. But thanks, Pam.
We're glad you're here, Frank.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You may not be by the time the night's over. I'm sure. Thank you.
Can I
make one more announcement?
Sure.
Tomorrow night, if any of you have a love of horses, and I know Dooley and Pat may, at the Equestrian Center up at Oxley, Agley is putting on a clinic that they have been putting on for the last 4 or 5 years. For anyone who's interested in veterinary medicine, medications, animal health, or whatever, and they will have national riders there and whatnot, and it's free and open to the public. It's quite a nice exposure. If you have any kids that you want to have an interesting evening night out with them, they might enjoy that. It starts about 5 o'clock, and it'll run until 9 or 9:30 tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Mike.
Can I ask Julia, were you going to report on the joint meeting with Cortland, or may I do that?
I had it on my list, but I'd much rather you do it because you set it up.
Well, that's all right.
No, please.
All right, I just wanted to make sure folks knew that we did have the joint luncheon with Cortland County legislators last week. It went very well. We had 13 legislators, the county administrator from Cortland and the deputy county administrator from Tompkins. Joe was out of town doing something really important when that happened. But we talked about a number of issues that have intermunicipal purposes. We talked about TC3. We talked about the problems with the state budget and mandates. We talked about various things having to do with indigent representation. They have a public defender system. We have a assigned counsel system and the administration of the assigned counsel system. We talked about whether we should relook at a joint jail and a number of other items. And Martha got us an up-to-date report on exactly blow-by-blow what was happening in the state budget negotiations. At the same time, we were able to, she went to the phone and came back with after a conference call and reported to all of us. This is the second in this this meeting. The people there seem to want to do that again, maybe in September. So I'll just keep that in your mind. We have a lot going with our sister county in Cortland, and I think closer intermunicipal cooperation towards shared services makes a lot of sense.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I noticed the I voted sticker on your lapel.
I did. I voted today in the village election, and there are village elections all across the county.
And the polls are open until 9, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anyone else? All right. Then I'd like to go. I know that the members of the public would love to hear my report on Medicaid and the state budget. If you want to stick around for that, that'll be coming up. But I'd like to first ask for Will, the chair of PDEC, to take Resolution J and K, and we'll go to that and then go to Resolution I, if you wouldn't mind.
So I'd like to move Resolution J, which is making a negative declaration of the environmental significance in relation to authorizing an agreement with the state of New York for transfer of West King Road parcel, which buffers the Finger Lakes Trail Spur to the Buttermilk Falls State Park.
There's a second. Pam seconds that. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will, I noticed that Dooley has a substitute resolution that will be introduced at some point, the main resolution. I was trying to read it and compare it to the one we passed in planning. What I couldn't find was substantive changes.
I can't find them either, and I think whatever got distributed was the wrong thing. So I will move things individually on the floor.
Okay, well, the question I wanted to ask then is there anything in the proposal that Dooley may bring forward that may change our mind about the neg deck on that we passed in planning?
Not that I'm aware of, Frank.
No, Frank.
Nothing? Okay, thank you.
Thanks for asking.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I really couldn't find any change.
Okay, we'll figure this out. All right, on Resolution J then, ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? That's unanimous. Go ahead,
okay.
With K.
And Resolution K is authorizing the state of New York the transfer of West King Road parcel, which buffers the Finger Lakes Trail, to Buttermilk Falls State Park. And I so move.
Seconded by?
Second.
Carol? All right. Discussion of this? Dooley?
I don't know what happened between my dictating changes over the phone and what got reproduced, but it's easy to do it verbally.
Okay.
You have a copy of the resolution which has line numbers. So I will suggest that on line 18, after Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation, parenthetically insert OPRHP so that we can use that later on. In line 23, at the end of the line, insert a policy after established. So it reads, the legislature established a policy that. And in line 32, and this is the more substantive one, it's a resolve, so it needed to, I believe, include what we were actually planning to do. So at the end of the first resolve, line 32, add, to enable New York State OPRHP to purchase tax parcel 1.1-12.42, comma, a 2.55-acre parcel in the town of Danby, comma, for $3,800. And that's it.
Okay.
So that's
I would consider those friendly.
And Carol?
Okay.
All right. And you have that, Kathy? Okay, great. All right. Any discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor of the revised Resolution K, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. And Resolution I. Well, Will will come back to your report, of course. Resolution I. Chair of the Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein.
Yes, on behalf of the Public Safety Committee, I'd like to introduce Resolution I, which passed the Public Safety Committee by a vote of, I think there were two people absent, and the three people who were there voted for it. And I'd like to speak to that if it's seconded.
So, read the title and then...
The title is Requesting the New York State Legislature to Enact Legislation Allowing Rifle Hunting in Tompkins County.
Thank you. Second by Jim. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah. Well, let's see. This has been a tremendous learning experience for me. I've spent some time at it, and I've learned more about rifles and shotguns and hunting and what people like to do and why they like to do it than any other resolution I've been involved in. And there are a bunch of really fundamental issues that at least this turned up that I would like to discuss. One, I think, is a very broad issue. It's the relationship between a legislature and the people that they legislate for. And let me give you the extreme positions. The extreme positions are that the legislature should allow only those things which it believes are good to take place. That's one extreme position. And the other extreme position is that the legislature ought to allow anything that anyone wants to do to take place unless there's good reason for them not to. And I, on my part, I go with the first, is that we're a land of liberty and people ought to do what they want to do unless there's a good reason why what they want to do is contrary to the public interest. So I've heard this from a number of people that's saying, well, why in the world would the legislature want to do this? It must be because they think that that this will help cull the deer. I don't think there's a chance that this is going to have any impact on the number of deer in the county. It's just too small. And indeed, that is not the reason that I think any of us on that committee voted for this. It's simply that I voted for it really as an agnostic. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about hunting, but my inclination was somebody wants to do it, okay, let them do it. And then I was pleased when I thought we put it on the agenda and then we learned something about it. And I was pleased when Will took this up in his committee and invited the DEC to come and give us some information on it. And I think as a result of that, I know a whole lot more. So another thing is that another general rule that I learned is don't get your facts from the people who are proposing or opposing a particular resolution. From the proponents, I heard that all counties in New York except three or four allow rifle hunting. That turns out not to be true. And from the opponents who presented it as a law of nature, namely that rifle bullets carry several miles and 10, 20 times as far as a shotgun bullet. That turns out not to be true either. So to me, the issue was, what's the problem? Why not? Someone wants to hunt, that's okay. Now, to give my personal involvement with this, I've never fired a rifle in my life or a shotgun. I've never gone hunting. I've only gone fishing twice in my life. I don't like the whole thing. And whether we allow it or we don't, I can assure you I'm not going to be out there anytime in the fall. So it's I have no dog in this fight, as they say. And to me, the argument against it is that it's dangerous and it will harm innocent people. And the point being that rifles have a longer range, and therefore those that miss their target, the bullet will go a long way and can strike people who have nothing to do with hunting and just sort of sitting there and taking a hike in the woods. And I think that's a very significant problem, and it had to be looked at. And so I did the best I could to look at this issue. And I have spent a fair amount of time doing this and understand it a lot better. Now, the database that I use to look into this problem is the database that the DEC keeps of hunting accidents. It turns out that the DEC lists every hunting accident that happens in the year, and I got 4 years of data, 2011, 10, 9, and 8. And I looked at all of these, and I looked at it in the following way. All right, let me also tell you about the counties in New York that do it, because this is important. It turns out that most counties in New York State do allow rifle hunting during deer season. And I would guess it's something like 40. And there's another 15 that don't allow it. And then there's half a dozen more that don't allow any hunting whatsoever, like Manhattan, for instance. That doesn't allow any hunting. What?
Only of human beings.
Right. And so I looked at the statistics on how many hunting accidents there were. And, I mean, I could see the fear, okay, that somebody's out hunting, they fire a bullet, it goes a long way, and it kills somebody that's sitting in their chair reading. And so I try to find out exactly how many deaths have there been in the last 4 years from hunting accidents. And it turns out that if you look at hunting accidents, that the majority of hunting accidents are hunters shooting other hunters, and in particular, shooting hunters in their own hunting party. And the second most important source of hunting accidents is hunters shooting themselves. This does not mean suicide. This means having an accident with the gun. The gun goes off, and somebody dies from it. If you look at the data, there are, in the past 4 years, in the 40 counties in which both shotguns and rifles are allowed, there have been 15 total deaths from hunting, which amounts to 2 3/4 deaths per year. That's the number of people that have been killed. On the other hand, none of the people seem very concerned about the accidents where the hunters shot themselves or where the hunters shot other hunters. So I took those out. And then it seemed to me I should look and see of the remainder how many were caused by shotguns and how many were caused by rifles, of these deaths of what I call civilians being killed by it, civilians being non-hunters. And, you know, the data didn't say, so I had to make some judgments, and I had to call up a couple of sheriffs saying, remember that accident 3 years ago where the kids were walking on the railroad, and they was that a shotgun or a rifle? He said, oh, that was a shotgun. I said, thank you, okay? So what I came up with was, get ready now, one. There was one death in the 40 counties that allow this in the past 4 years where that death was somebody sitting out of the way in their house or walking down the street that were killed by a rifle. So I said to myself, well, what does that mean? So let's look and see, suppose we pass this resolution, and suppose Tompkins County is like all the other counties, how many people do we expect to see killed in Tompkins County as a result of this? And the number I come up with, I'm sorry, I'm not making a joke, okay, I put the numbers through, it's one person every 160 years are going to be the number of people that are killed. What about people who are wounded? People who are wounded, it's going to be more than that. Now, this is hard to say because this is a mixture of rifles and shotguns. It turns out that two-thirds of the accidents come from shotguns, not rifles. So that gives me one every 6 years. Okay, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be an injury once every, a non-lethal injury once every 6 years. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. I've been accused, by the way, of being callous and not worrying about one death every 160 years. You can do what you want with that. But I believe there will be someone killed walking along the street, but there are limits. We cannot eliminate every single accidental death that takes place. I am frightened when I walk down Hope Plaza at Cornell when a skateboard comes by me and misses me by about 6 inches. But there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, I think the guy's got a right to skateboard. So in my mind, that is not enough of a danger to keep somebody from doing what he or she wants to do. And that's the end of, that's why I will vote for this. That's my argument.
Thank you, Peter. Jim?
Thank you, Martha. Peter, excellent report. Some of the emails, and let me just start with that. Some of the emails I've received, I believe all of you have, also have started out in a fashion that made perfect sense given the knowledge that the person had who wrote the email. And then as days progressed, the emails got more of what I can say novel, in the sense that the reason we're doing this is we are an arm of rifle manufacturers. We have a goal to cull the herd. We have someone mentioned that it was to improve tourism, and it was mentioned this evening by, I believe, Liz Thomas, that in our resolution we don't have any reason. Well, we're not supposed to put reasons in the resolution. What we're asking for is the state legislature to change the law for Tompkins County. The reasons are wide and varied, and they have been given before the state legislature, I'm guessing 40 times anyway. And so they know pretty much what the reasons are. Counties are trying to do it. And it was my sense that this resolution was pretty clean in the fact that it didn't have reasons. It just said one thing. We want the state legislature to take a look at this and vote it up or down, if in fact it comes out of here. Peter mentioned the safety issues, and I believe Will put this together or got it from DEC, showing the counties that allow rifle hunting. And there's one paragraph that DEC put out, and I think it maybe tends to answer one of the concerns that I heard back here. The number of hunters is declining. We all know that. But the hunting incident rate per 100,000 hunters is falling much faster. Since the 60s, the number of hunters has declined 20%, while the incident rate has declined over 70%. The past five-year average is 5.3 incidents per 100,000 hunters, compared to 19 per 100,000 in the 60s. And so clearly one can say, yes, there are less hunters, there will be less incidents. Obviously, that could be true, could be better shooters. I think one of the main reasons that incidents have gone down since the 60s is because of education and training that people have to go through to get a license, a big game deer license, to even go in the woods. And I have sympathy for the people who talk about they go hiking in big game hunting time. I would have to ask myself, if I'm going to do that, one, please wear orange, like all the hunters have to, and two, I think big game hunting is 2 weeks in every year, maybe 2.5 weeks in the year in November and December, and I don't know. I think I would, discretion would be the better part of valor. I might find someone else, someplace else, to hunt, or not hunt, but hike along the river or along the canal, along the lake. There are many trails that are not in hunting areas that people could use. But people are going to do that, and I don't have a problem with that. But I would hope that they realize, whether we have rifles or not, it's not a good time to hike in the woods during big game hunting time unless you're properly attired to do that. I'm going to vote for this. I think the safety issues are pretty clear over time, what people have been able to do with their rifles and shotguns in the woods of New York State. And I think that issue is being highlighted too much in terms of being a danger to people in the community.
Thank you, Jim. Anyone else? Will.
Thank you, Martha. Well, like Peter, I too have gotten an education about this issue. I've learned a lot in recent weeks, and much of what I've learned actually was somewhat reassuring. I went to the DEC, found the statistics, and I am somewhat relieved that the accident rates have been going down. PDQ meeting, we discussed this at length, and I was very happy that we had some hunters in attendance, and they spoke very intelligently and very thoughtful in terms of what they do and how they do it, and that was consistent with the hunters that I have met in my own neighborhood. We have, I live on the west side of town. I literally can get on a bicycle and be at my house in about 20 minutes from here. And it's legal to hunt literally out my back door in the town of Ithaca. And I have, over the years, met, it's private land, so it's not posted, and I've met a number of the people that do hunt there, primarily bow hunters, but I've also met some folks doing shotgun. And to a person, they have been people that are careful and respectful of their neighbors. So what's the problem? Well, part of what the problem is that the distance involved in a rifle bullet is, in fact, quite far. Now, it's been stated that shotguns also go far, and that is a cause for worry, quite frankly. You know, if it were up to me, I would actually be moving to try to restrict that. I feel much more comfortable with things that are, at least where I live, at close range. A bullet can travel considerable distance. Jim, I haven't heard, or Peter, I can't remember who said it, 2-3 miles. I have not heard that, but I have heard that they can easily travel a mile. Typically, they're going to hit woods or ground or something, so it's not generally happened, but it does happen. It could happen in my backyard, and that is a cause for concern. Jim, you asked... You said that the hunting season is 2 weeks. You said, I believe.
Yeah, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I
three
weeks. Yeah, I was just checking this, trying to figure out the dates. But I'm somebody who does enjoy getting out in the woods around the year whenever possible. And a huge difference is when people do that, they are not presenting any kind of threat to other people, and I think that's something that needs to be considered. Peter, you pointed out that the number of injuries and deaths is very small and has been going down, and I think the reality is in part to the fact that there are far fewer hunters. They are better trained, and quite frankly, the ones that are left, I think, are more likely to be very, very serious and very, very careful. But in considering this proposed change, we have to consider the possibility that there are also among that pool hunters that are not careful. You said one death in 4 years. I just would like to share with you a death that happened 4 years ago down in Sullivan County. Swan Lake is the community. A toddler died, and a New York City man was arrested, charged with manslaughter.
Edward Taibbi, 45, Howard Beach, was arrested for shooting that they say killed 60-month-old Charlie Scala. At 4 p.m., Scala was standing in the kitchen of her grandparents' mobile home where the family had gathered to watch football. And the bullet ripped through a wall, struck her in the area of the right shoulder and neck. She was taken by relatives in a car to the Catskill Regional Medical Center. And it goes on. One hunter called it a freak, needle and haystack accident, but one child is dead. And one man's life is ruined. Could that have happened with other weapons? I'm sure it probably could have. But in point of fact, it happened because the man was using a 300 Winchester Magnum high-powered rifle from a tree stand, firing down, doing something that a responsible hunter would never do. But that bullet had that power. And I don't want to give that to, I don't want to unleash that to our community. So I will be voting against this. I hope others will keep this in mind as they vote.
Thank you, Will. Brian, Dooley, and Peter.
I tend to do things a little differently. And I know Peter is very much a stats guy and data guy, and which is great because we certainly need stuff like that. But I really hadn't given this much thought until, you know, we started speaking about the resolution. Since that time, I've spoken to, in my area, I know many, many deer hunters, big game hunters. and I did it myself for 20, 25 years. I don't do it anymore. But at any rate, I went to our local rod and gun club just asking, you know, I had a petition resolution type thing. And of all the members they have there, there was only like three signatures on it when I picked it up a week later. To my surprise, actually. But since that time, and even when I picked it up, I was just asking around. I go, you know, I had this feeling that you folks were going to support this, being that most of you are big game hunters and so on and so forth. And of the comments that I did get, some of them are like, it's almost too easy. You know, it's too easy to, it's too efficient to kill something with a rifle. They would much prefer to do it with a shotgun. It has been stated here tonight that you can go out a greater distance to get it, to get your target, which is true. However, with a rifle, most times, if not all the time, when you're hunting big game, that necessitates that you use a scope to do this. So a shotgun, and I'm going back to my days when I did it. It was very much open sights, and it was nothing to shoot anywhere from two to five times at one animal as it's running. And the only thing you're concentrating on is that animal. There's no way you can keep up with the background on that. Conversely, with a rifle, you would have to be looking down the scope. Hopefully you're trained to look beyond that, see what the background is. And generally, most times, you're only going to get one shot. And it's generally a more efficient way to kill an animal than with a shotgun. Now, there is ammunition out there, legally ammunition out there, that is exactly the same as what is being proposed here. It's in use, and it's in use with guns that, in my mind, aren't as accurate just by the length of their barrel and the difficulty in picking up a target that a rifle would be. And of the long rifles, there are some out there. I mean, believe it or not, people do break the law. I found that a little bit in my former career, but they do break the law, and they're available. They're going to go ahead and use them and take their chances using them. I guess Peter said it kind of in closing that, you know, when you I understand this is an issue that kind of goes to each individual person's core, and you know, I understand that. But to me, it would almost be, in the long run, it would almost be safer for everyone if safety is the concern to allow this versus not allow it. And knowing full well that you have that same sort of ammunition out there now with not as accurate of weapons, you do have, I mean, everybody's heard it. Somebody shooting a shotgun 5 times right in a row, you hear it all the time. Well, probably, you know, at least 3 or 4 of them are missing. They're missing the target, and they're going somewhere. You don't have as good a chance with this sort of thing because you only get one shot, and normally the animal is relatively still at the time. So you've got time to look behind you and see, you know, if there's something you shouldn't be shooting. These folks that do the training courses and all that, I remember taking my own training course, and that's what's beat into your head is, you know, safety, know your background, know all this stuff. Very little time spent on hunting. Either you can do it or you can't. So, at any rate, I have a hard time, again, you know, the argument, well, don't do it here, go over there and do it. You know, they allow it, go on over there. I can see it. You know, I'm not so sure I agree with it. I don't see, I see actual benefits to allowing this here. And I will support it. And we'll see how it goes.
Thank you, Brian. Dooley?
Well, it's always fun to listen to Peter's approach to issues like this. But, Peter, I am disappointed that a hunter's life doesn't count in your calculations. You know, people are people. I think that what I wanted to say was well summarized by Liz Thomas and Herb Engman, who made a number of points. For me, the biggest problem is that there is no compelling reason to do this. And I would support it if, in return, Sundays would be gun-free so that people could once again go out on Sunday. It's been a long time since I've felt safe in the woods. I miss that. But that's not being offered. So I can't support this. I see no need for it. And I do see the fear that it engenders in a number of our residents, because we've heard from them. And that doesn't seem like something to be ignored.
Thank you, Julie. Peter and Pam and Carol.
Yeah, let me talk about a couple of things that have been mentioned. One, the range of a shotgun versus the range of a rifle. I'm no expert. I have taught physics, and that's one of the standard freshman problems is what's the trajectory of a bullet that's fired with a muzzle velocity and so after, and when will it hit the ground? Now, there have been two conflicting statements made. One statement I made is that the range of a rifle bullet's about 1/4 mile. And Herb made a statement that said that a rifle bullet fired from one side of the lake will go to the other side of the lake. Now, obviously, one of us is wrong, right? Because it's a whole lot more than 1/4 mile. But the answer is that we're both right. Herb is right, and so am I. And the reason why it's 1/4 mile instead of 2 miles, which is what I'm guessing it is across the lake, is that when you fire a rifle, you're a hunter, there's a deer over there, you aim your... Sorry, Joe, but you aim your rifle
used to it.
At the deer and pull the trigger. And that deer stands 3-4 feet off the ground. And so what happens is that as the bullet goes, it's going to go 2 miles unless something gets in its way. Suppose the deer doesn't get in his way and you made a mistake. What happens is it starts to fall very slowly. And after a quarter of a mile, it hits the ground. Now, if there's no ground to hit because you were standing on top of a hill and firing across the lake, it'll go its full 2 miles, okay? So that explains that. But the question is, which is the more likely circumstances, firing from one hill to another or standing on a level plain looking at a deer and firing it? It's more likely to be the latter, and that's why the appropriate range is 1/4 mile. And the difference between the shotgun and the rifle, I think it must be rather small. The other point, I wanted to make this business about the hunters' lives. It's not that, I think it's awful for hunters to be killed. But the question we have is, will allowing rifles kill more hunters? And there's no evidence of that. These hunters are not killed by a stray bullet that goes miles. These hunters are killed because, generally, because they haven't been trained. Because they're not aiming the rifle at somebody. They're dropping the rifle or somehow not worrying about the jog it's getting or pulling the trigger by mistake. And the reason they kill other hunters is because that's who's around. It doesn't go a mile. The bullet kills who happens to be in the area. And that's the other people in the hunting parties. So whether it's a rifle or a shotgun, I have absolutely no idea. Probably one is less likely to go off than the other, and I don't know which it is, but I haven't heard that issue raised. So that's really what it's all about. And, you know, Will, you told a sad story. It's a sad story. There's no question that's a tragedy. On the other hand, I'm telling you about this other thing that I did. I called the sheriff up in Jefferson County to understand this particular case. And here was the case. 4 young kids, I mean legal age, 4 young men, were walking down a railroad track, happening to have shotguns with them. They could have had rifles. And one of them heard a rustling in the bush. And so he turned his shotgun towards it, and he fired. And it was a direct hit. Unfortunately, it was a direct hit on a human being who was rustling in the woods and not a deer. He didn't look and see what the hell he was firing at. And that's criminal, okay? Now, people do all kinds of funny things. They do bad things with cars. They shouldn't drink and drive, but they do. But we don't outlaw cars.
Peter, can you wrap up, please?
That's wrapped up. But that's the point I'm trying to make, is that if you... All right, I'll wrap up by saying the question to be asked is, does it matter whether it's a rifle or a shotgun? And if it doesn't, it seems to me you should allow it to happen. And I don't see any evidence that says that it's important whether it's a rifle or a shotgun.
I've got Pam and Carol and Pat.
I just wanted to say that I've stated this before, but I'm not against hunting. I'm not against guns. But I decided that what I wanted to do was to see what my constituents thought. And so I sent out an email to 3 different listservs. That includes the city of Ithaca, the town of Ithaca, and then, of course, part of my district goes all up to the town of Ulysses, just to get measure people's reactions, because I felt as if that this is an issue that people care about and would want to have some input on. And I was surprised at the number of responses I got. I a lot of people emailed me. I had some people who said that they thought that it was an okay idea, that we have a deer problem and that we should allow this to help with that issue. But the overwhelming number of people who emailed me were against this. And so I am going to vote against this because I think that the level of discomfort among people is great on this issue. I don't see any particular reason why we need to do it at this time. At a time when the population in our county is growing, I'm not sure that this is the moment at which we should be increasing the firearms. So I will vote against it.
Thank you, Pam. Carol?
Yeah, I've really grappled with this issue. And I was very concerned when it came to us that it not be, that we not react as city versus rural, or any distinctions that come to mind when we tend to look at these issues. And I looked really carefully at whether there were compromises possible. It was very frustrating to me that the DEC, which I think has done a much better job, the figures really show it, that they've done a much better job in education, that has really gone a long ways towards reducing the accident and death rate from rifle hunting. But they don't allow us to come to a compromise that would either change the time frame and allow certain days of the week or us to adjust any of the weeks of the year, nor do they allow any kind of compromise that allows us to set portions of the county in which we can allow different activities. You either buy in or you don't, which is quite frustrating. I will tell you that although I live in the city, in a city environment, probably most of you will be surprised to know that I'm a pretty good shot, with a light rifle at least, definitely better prone, okay sitting, standing not quite as well, and I have shot rifles, shotguns as well. I've hunted not a lot. But my chart, and my experience with a rifle is pretty extensive. I spent years. In fact, I graduated Cornell because I didn't have time to change for gym. So that's where I learned to shoot a rifle, and I kept doing it. And after years of practice, my chart doesn't look, my targets don't look anything like the target that was held up there. And I just don't trust that people who aren't spending a lot of the year training and practicing and getting trained, who come out during hunting season once a year, are all going to be the kind of shots that we're talking about. I will also say that I looked at the maps that were distributed from the DEC about where hunting is allowed and not allowed, and I agreed with whoever it was who said that we hear different things depending on the person's perspective. We heard that it's only allowed in a few counties versus it's allowed lots of places. So I actually went and looked at the map. And what struck me about the maps, about where rifle hunting is allowed versus not, had an awful lot to do with the density and the density of population in the area, so that areas that were quite dense, the DEC doesn't even, they're blacked out, the DEC doesn't even allow hunting, and areas that are more rural tended to allow this, and then there were pockets on the map, Broome County, for example, the Buffalo area, Rochester, I believe. I wasn't sure about Rochester, but certainly around Binghamton. So the distinction to me came down to where do we see ourselves in density, given that we can't compromise and have parts of the county. So for me, on balance, I can't take responsibility for the few lives that might be risked and the wounded animals that might be running across the roads in front of cars. So I can't support this the way it's written, although I would have been willing to, and some of you know I had contacted you to see could we work out a compromise. And if we could have, I would have.
Thanks, Carol. Pat and then Mike.
Thank you, Martha. Some of you probably already know, because you've heard me talk a little bit about this, that by culture and by background, this is a proposal that I should support and would like to be able to support. I am a hunter, and although I've not hunted recently, I've spent many hours out in the woods. I've hunted deer, I've hunted small game, and I grew up in a family that hunts. In a lot of ways, I wish I could still do that, but I can't. We ate a lot of venison when I was a kid. It was one of our most common meats that we had on our table. But one of the other things I learned when I was a kid and was kind of drilled into me, it came back to me when I was thinking about this proposal. And before I tell you what that is, I want to say that a lot of the things that the folks have said around the table here tonight have resonated with me, whether it be checking in with constituents or looking at the statistics or whatever, and I want to thank you. I'm not going to repeat all those things. But what I was taught was that my right to do something stopped where the other guy's nose begins. And I think to some degree that thinking applies for me in this case. If we were talking about allowing people to partake in an activity that provided a risk mainly to themselves, for instance, skiing or cross-country hiking or climbing mountains or driving race cars or something like that, my thinking about this would probably be different. But we're talking about an activity that entails not only risk to the person that's out in the wood, because hunters do shoot other hunters sometimes, unfortunately, but it also entails risk to passersby, people who are not even remotely interested in partaking in that particular activity. And I think that puts it over, for me, into a different realm. And I have to disagree with my friend Jim, who says that reason doesn't matter. I think reasons do matter in this case. And I have had a number of conversations about this distance that the bullet travels and what you can shoot with a rifle versus what you can shoot with a shotgun and how far and so on. And finally I said to a person that I know from the Lansing Rod and Gun Club, I said, so if all things being equal, you can kill a deer with a shotgun or you can kill a deer with a rifle, you've already got the right to do it with a shotgun. Why do you want to be able to do it with a rifle? And the answer I got was two things. One, you can kill further at a further distance, which to me at that time contradicted the argument that I had been hearing that rifles and shotguns shoot just about the same distance, very close to the same. But the second answer I got was rather intriguing, and that was, I thought, very candid. You know, this is something that, just like anybody that participates in an activity, something new comes along and you want to try it. It's a new set of hiking boots. It's a new brand that everybody all of a sudden is buying. It's a, you know, a new way of doing an old activity, and everybody wants to get in on it. And I understand that. I really do understand that. But I don't consider that to be a reason enough to do this. So much as I would like to, one of the things that I have said to the people I've talked to is, I think what we've started here tonight is a campaign of education. And I think that's been lacking in this whole question. And I think if the hunting community in Tompkins County, at some point in the future, if this doesn't pass tonight, and if there's any thought that they might want to bring this back at some point, I think that there needs to be more public education about it so that there will be a better understanding, so that that level of fear can be decreased. There is truly just too much fear out there. And personally, I just cannot justify supporting this in the present climate that exists in the community.
Thank you, Pat. Mike.
I was pleased to see John Morey come tonight and speak to us on privilege of the floor. I've known John for many of his 58 years that he talked about. He was my neighbor for a long time. I have a lot of respect for him. He's a quality person, and I think we owe a debt of gratitude to people like John who are out there training people in hunter safety. And I think that because of that is probably the reason we've seen these reductions in the number of accidents over the years that EEC has talked about. What John said tonight, I don't question for an instant. I believe
what he said. I think that the issues with the shotgun and the rifle can be exaggerated one way or the other. I think some of the fears can be exaggerated one way or the other. But I don't see, as Dooley said, the compelling need to make the change now. I think Pat's point about education is a good one. I think people have a right to be concerned when it comes to the use of firearms in the out-of-doors. And we can't just dismiss those concerns without being carefully thoughtful about what is driving them. And I think that if the statistics and everything can come around, maybe this, as Pat says, can be looked at sometime in the future. But tonight, I'm not compelled that we are taking anything away from our hunting and sporting groups by not making a change, and therefore I don't think I can support it tonight.
Thank you, Mike. I think we might be ready to vote. Anything else? All right. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. All opposed. That's 4-10. The resolution fails. I want to thank the members of the public who have started us on that education path, and encourage you to stay in touch. So, thank you very much. I want to do another little bit of shuffling because I see Brett Bossert there waiting for something on the consent agenda. So, since we're kind of mixed up tonight anyway, I'd like to go through the consent agenda and then take our break that we usually take. First, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Dooley.
Withdraw Resolution D. I don't have the title in front of me. Would you read it?
Okay. Will?
And I understand there's questions about Resolution H, so if we could move that off the consent.
Off of consent, and I'm afraid that's why Ed was here for a long time and then left. So, okay. All right, that's off consent. Or, well, all right. That's what we do when we get run through them, but all right. It's still under consideration, not right. Off our agenda.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Anything else? Okay, I'll read the agenda and let me know if there's anything else that you would like to pull. Resolution A, authorization to accept an award of a grant from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services. Resolution B, budget adjustments, Office of for the Aging. Resolution C, acceptance. C is off? Okay. Resolution E, authorizing 2012 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for TCAT and Tompkins County. Resolution F, approval of 2012 grants for Arts and Cultural Organizational Development Community Arts Partnership. Resolution G, award of 2012 Tourism Capital Grants, Tompkins County Area Development, and a number of appointments. To Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Dave McKenna, Recreation Partnership, Frank Proto, Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Pam Mackesy and Kathy Ruiz Herrera, Planning Advisory Board, Will Burbank, Regional Forest Practice Board, Pat Pryor, Soil and Water Conservation District, Frank Proto, Agriculture, Farmland and Protection Board, David M. Diaz, Air Service Board, Larry Baum, Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Louise Miller, Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Seth Peacock and Christopher Colossi, Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Margaret Ryan, Board of Health, Amy DeFabio, M.D., Patricia Meinhardt, M.D., M.P.H.M.A., Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Christine Donovan. We get a motion on the consent agenda. Moved by Frank, seconded by Carol. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. Those are unanimous. So I'd like to take a 10-minute break and come back and pick up where we left off, which would be with the chair's report. Jim?
I wasn't paying close attention. I apologize. Was Resolution B
withdrawn for the night? It's taken off the agenda, not just taken off consent, but taken off.
You,
B. You said D or B?
I said B. Whatever Frank pulled.
I pulled C.
C.
Oh, C.
Okay.
Is that gone, or are we going to...
Off consent.
It's just off the consent.
Oh, all right. Agenda. Okay.
Okay. All right. Come back in 10 minutes, please. Thank you. Yep.